Thank you. My name is Steven, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Phil and Dino, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Rena will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Rena. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yoni will read the steps.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Jane will read the traditions.
I am Jane. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, each AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Kate Kay.
Hi, my name is Kate, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank each one of you for showing up tonight. Years ago, I wasn't able to show up for much, so to have a bunch of people in a church is pretty amazing who are alcoholic, who think they might be alcoholic, so thank you. And for those who are new, coming back, feeling a little anxious, sit back, relax, you're in a really safe place. And I say that because I always need a safe place. And I was told that when I first came in, because I wasn't safe by myself. I needed a lot of people and I needed a lot of help when I came in. Almost 11 years ago, my sobriety date is May 18th, 1998. And it's a good time to speak because I was hitting my bottom about now. And my bottom wasn't too pretty at all. My drinking started just like most people, pretty young, thought it was a lot of fun, all that good stuff. First time I got drunk, blacked out, partied, danced, just thought I was the life of the party, and I wanted to do it again, again, and again. I didn't think that there was any problem with it. But that's the way my drinking went. I never socially drank. I never drank one. I didn't like drinking one. Sorry. The end of my drinking, I was pretty much alone. I was drinking at a bar, an old Irishman bar, and I was pretty young at the time. And for a little while, I kept thinking to myself, what am I doing here? I wasn't working. I'd quit my job before they could fire me. And I thought that that was fine as well. And I was okay financially at the moment. And I was hanging out with these 60-plus-year-old men and women. And I thought, when I get to be like them, then maybe that'll be a problem. And months later, I was still at that same bar, doing the same thing, hanging out with the same people. And I realized, I am one of them. But I had no idea what I could do about it. I had no idea because I couldn't stop going to that bar. I couldn't stop drinking. I tried to go home, drink by myself, and maybe I wouldn't do it so much. I would try anything, actually. I actually would call girlfriends, and I would talk to them about spirituality and God, and I'd read books about it and thought I was doing the right thing, finding the right path. The problem was I always had a bottle with me. If it was a bottle of vodka, it was a bottle of wine, it didn't matter. And I would call these girls. And one of my girlfriend's husbands would go to church like every day. So I figured I'd get something, she'd tell me some secret, that he had that I could like live by. And the conversation that would be me slurring my words. And she just being, I'm sure sitting on the other end, just shaking her head, going, I gotta go. And that's the way they always ended up. I had a little mantra also at the last year of my drinking was, I think I drink too much. I just think I drink too much. And I would say that every once in a while to someone. I think I drink too much. I would say it to a therapist, or I'd say it to the bartender, I think I drink too much. And he didn't care. He was like, yes, kept putting cash on the bar. But I said it to somebody else or something at the bar, and at one point he said, we're just alcoholic. I had no idea what that word was. It just kind of like floated right past me, and I ignored it. So it's now, February and whatnot. I have no friends. I had one friend who would kind of find me at this bar, and he would try to get me out. and I really didn't like to do that, but every once in a while I would, and we actually went back to my apartment. It was an old boyfriend, and nothing was between us at this point, and I was just so drunk and completely disheveled and such a disaster that he left me there, and his last words were, "When you get your act together, then we can talk." And I sat in my apartment, which is a beautiful apartment, by myself, very little furniture, because I couldn't do that, and just sat there and said, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop. And I've been recently talking to my sponsor that I want to thank, Robin, for being there always with me these past, I think it's almost 3 years now. My God. And I've had sponsors before that. But we were just talking, and I haven't heard it in a while, that I have a really, really deadly disease. It could have killed me. And I am really grateful that I have the opportunity, thank you, for standing up in front of you. Sober. I can stand, and I'm not tipping over. I might be shaking a little bit, but I'm not falling over. And I haven't heard that it's such a serious disease. And the disease is physical, mental, and spiritual. I was so desperate I did want something those years ago, but I had no idea how to go about getting it. I was so arrogant and angry and frustrated and thought it was everybody else's fault. So I drank about it. So I drank through that. Today is a very different kind of process. The hardest thing of getting sober was having to tell my parents that I was an alcoholic. It was the saddest thing I had to do because I'd failed. But the one thing that they gave me, which was the support and love, and it was okay. I'm an Irish Catholic, so they definitely knew about alcohol and alcoholism. And they were really grateful that I was willing to come to AA. They did know about it. They didn't know a tremendous amount about it, and they weren't always forthcoming about all those kinds of things. But I was very willing at the time because it was over. When I look back, I realize I couldn't get a job. I couldn't make friends. I couldn't make phone calls. I couldn't do anything. When I came into AA, I was still frightened and fearful and really angry, very angry. But there were people there when I showed up who just kept saying, "Come back, hello, hi, Kate." The next week, they knew my name. That was huge to me, that somebody knew my name. I had the opportunity to go to a lot of meetings because I wasn't working, which is great. At that time, I had a sponsor. She was pretty much handed to me, and I was very, very willing because I had nowhere else to go. If I wasn't going to be able to go to AA, I knew I was going to have to go to a bar. So AA was where I was going to go. One of the turning points in my sobriety was several months into it, maybe about 9 months, I was at a meeting. It was a Friday night, and I knew if I went home, I was going to drink. I knew it. And I was so fearful. I was in the middle of accepting what AA had or accepting what I was going to have to do for myself. And I didn't want to do it because I knew what it was going to do to me. So I became very humble, and I asked this gal, "Can I go out to dinner with you?" I was in so much fear to do something like that. And she said, "Sure," and then just kind of ignored me. And I was so grateful. You know, she didn't try to do anything. She just let me follow her. And I think about that all the time because it's a fellowship. And I needed that next step. I needed to be part of other people because I couldn't do it on my own. I couldn't go home and just sit there watching bad television, doing nothing, because I was in my own head. I needed the fellowship, and I needed all of you to help me get out of my head and to be of service. And that's what I do today. I do fellowship. I show up at meetings. I participate, and I participate in life. I didn't have any of these things without AA. My life was a disaster. It really, really was. I'm in a new field for work, and I am completely overwhelmed and blown away that I am doing this, taking this very different step than what I was doing. And the only reason I get to do it is because I get to talk to other people in AA who've done it before. I get to show up. I get to pray when I'm at work. I can just sit quietly for a moment, and I have to always remember that. Don't always, and I get freaked and frustrated. But then I call my sponsor, and she goes, "Did you pray? Could you just pray?" And, you know, years and years ago, I wanted so desperately to pray, but I was so in fear of doing that. because I just didn't think anything or anyone was out there to help me. But I realized that they are, and that AA is there to help me through all of my struggles, through all of the joys that I enjoy today, too. It's not about just struggles, but I get to do and have fun, and I don't have to use alcohol or anything at all to laugh, to have a good time. And that's something also is a completely new concept to me. So I thank all of you. I thank AA. I thank my sponsor, my previous sponsors, and I thank all of those who are going to be coming through the doors tomorrow as well, because I'm going to be here. I'm not going anywhere. I have no desire, and I have no wish to go anywhere. I need to keep coming back. So thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Scott S.
Hi, I'm Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. First, I'd like to thank Jero for giving me the opportunity to be of service in my home group. I'd also like to thank my sponsor, David, who has basically been taking my calls every day since I got sober on September 12th of 2007. And with his help, I am working on Steps 9 and practicing Steps 10, 11, and 12. Okay, so what it was like. I was born in a fishbowl. And what I mean by that is I was born with a pane of glass surrounding me on all sides. There was a boundary between me and you at all points in time. And for as much as I may have thought I got you or you got me, there was always that barrier. And I was never able to truly understand you. And because of it, you could never understand me, so I was never able to express my thoughts and my feelings and my emotions. So I kept it all bottled in. Someone said to me, "Scott, how are you?" I say, "I'm fine. I'm good. I'm well." And I'd quickly ask them about themselves. And that was a really lonely place to live. And you could stick me in a room of 1,000 people, and I'd still feel there was that barrier. And then what broke that barrier for me was alcohol. As soon as I had my very first drink, two things happened. One, that glass was broken. And I became the life of the party. I got you. You got me. I'd jump on your back, give you a noogie, and tell you I love you. And I would walk. It gave me such my ego was lifted. My self-esteem was better. I would be walking down the street. I thought I had theme music and a spotlight on me. And every step I took, I thought I was going to be videoed for my E! True Hollywood story. And the other thing that alcohol did for me, it was immediately it gave me consequences to my actions. And right at first, the consequences were small. I would have a sleepless night. I'd get sick. Maybe I'd miss a baseball game or something. But very quickly for me, the consequences got worse. In my late teens, I crashed a car. In my mid-20s, I ended up in a hospital where the doctor told me he was surprised I didn't slip into a coma and die because of my alcohol content. In my late 20s, I got arrested in New Orleans for drinking, which is kind of impossible to do. And if you want to hear about that story, we can talk another time. And then in my early 30s, I was away with some friends on a trip, and I drank myself into a stupor and thought I was giving myself an alcohol-induced heart attack. And after I sort of calmed down, I remember staring at myself in the mirror and saying, I can't do this anymore. And I was very fortunate that I had a very good friend of mine from college who's in this program. Many of you guys know Rajesh. And Rajesh was my roommate in college. And I've seen Rajesh, and he had 6-plus years of sobriety at that time. And I'd seen him as a power of example, how he became a man and someone that I look up to probably more than most people, even till this day. It also means I've been hearing Rajesh say the word awesome since I've been 18. And I called Rajesh, and we got together, and I told him what had happened, and he asked me a simple question. He said, "Do you want another way?" And I said, "I don't know. I'm not joining your cult. I'm not doing that stuff." But he said, "I'll give you a challenge." And I was, I'm one for challenges, so whatever you want, I'm going to do it. He said, "Give me 90 days. He said, if you give me 90 days, and if your life is not better on day 90 than it was on day one, I will refund you your misery in full." So I took the challenge. But he said what I have to do is I had to come into this program, find a sponsor, and do whatever he told me to do for 90 days. So what else did I have to lose? I figured I'd let somebody else try to drive the cab for a little while. And so I did. As I came in, I got a sponsor. And that sponsor told me to call him every day. That sponsor told me to call other alcoholics every day, told me to write a gratitude list every day, which I still do to this day, and it's probably the greatest gift I ever got. He also told me I had to read from a book, I had to sit with him once a week and reread it with him, and then I had to get down on my knees every morning, every night, and I had to pray. I would think I was on board with everything until that last part. I didn't understand getting on my knees. I didn't believe in a higher power, a God, or whatever you wanted to call it. Not until at least October 10th of 2007. And that's the day I had a spiritual experience, and I remember that day perfectly, and I'll tell you why. I've been going through some personal things up in New York and been pushing off a business trip that I had to go to Dallas, Texas. And after five or six times of pushing it back, I had to go. Did not want to go. And I'm in Dallas, Texas, and my sponsor says, pick up the phone, call Dallas Intergroup, and let them take you to a meeting. So I call Dallas Intergroup. A guy named Ken answers the phone. I tell him when I'm coming into town. Ken says, great, I'll be at your hotel at 6 o'clock. He picks me up and takes me to a meeting. And we go to the meeting, and after the meeting is over, Ken says to me, by the way, I have another commitment. I can't take you home, but this guy, JJ, is going to take you home. I said, okay. Meet JJ after the meeting, and we walked to his truck. He drove a 1972, pickup truck. You couldn't tell what the color of the car was. It was all rusted. We get into the car. There was, springs coming out of the seat, and he takes a screwdriver and jams it into the neck of the steering wheel. That's how JJ started his car. JJ and I, on paper, could not be two different people. I mean, we were so far apart, it was scary. And we start driving back to the 20 minutes back to my hotel, and JJ starts telling me his story. He'd been in the program 3 or 4 years, and for the 2 years prior to him entering the program, JJ was living in the woods. JJ had just boxes of Crown Royal. He had some money in his pocket. If he needed to bathe, he bathed in someone's backyard, and as he said, I didn't brush my damn teeth for 2 years. He also had a gun on him. And he said, I had the gun, not for myself, but if anyone was going to come near me and try to steal my alcohol, I was going to kill them. And I was perfectly willing to go to jail for the rest of my life if they came near me. I'm freaking out in the car now. I've got my hand on the steering wheel, on the door handle, and I'm really starting to freak out. But for the next 2 hours, JJ and I drove between Dallas and Fort Worth just talking. And for the first time in my entire life, I started to talk. I was telling JJ things that I've never told anybody. Feelings, emotions. It just kind of just started throwing up on JJ. It was everywhere, and it was great. For the next 2 days, JJ would pick me up at 6 o'clock, take me to the 6:30 meeting, and we would drive around Dallas-Fort Worth, the exact same route for those 3 days. On day 4, October 10th of 2007, I went to that meeting. I picked up my 30-day coin there. And after the meeting, we get into the car, and JJ stabs his car with the screwdriver, and the car starts. And instead of making a left out of the driveway, we made a right. And now all of a sudden, we're going down this really long road, no lights, no cars, and my heart's starting to freak out again. I'm thinking homicidal maniac with a screwdriver in his car, and I'm gonna die, and they're not gonna find my body for 6 months. And he was very quiet for that trip, where the first 3 days he was very talkative. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking I'm gonna open this door at 50 miles an hour, I'm gonna stop, drop, and roll, and all this stuff. And next thing I know, we pull into an apartment complex. And he puts the car in park and rips his screwdriver out and says, get out. And he says, follow me. And I follow him down this very long, poorly lit path, up these stairs, and he takes out his keys and he wiggles them around a little bit and kicks open this door. And only with the light of the from that really poor lit path behind me, I can see in this room. And there are fish mounted on the walls, and there's deer heads on the walls, and I'm thinking my head's the next thing on his wall. And JJ says, all right, sit down. And he whips into his pocket, and he pulls out his big book. For the next 3 hours, JJ takes me through the first 3 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we came towards the end of the 3rd step, and he says to me, are you willing to believe in something more powerful than yourself? And I'm on my knees in this random guy's apartment in front of his couch. I don't know anything. And I'm holding his hand. And I pause for a second. And I reflect on the last couple months of my life. how I didn't want to be in Dallas, how I didn't even want to sit with Rajesh and take that challenge, and how all these things had unfolded. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting with this guy. And yes, I came to believe that there was something greater than me. And that story is really important to me because it reminds me to expect the unexpected. And when I came into this program, I just wanted to stop drinking and gain a little control. And the gifts that I've gotten in this program, I have my voice. I'm able to talk, share my feelings and my emotions. There are two women here tonight that mean more to me than anything in this world, and that I love more than anything in this world. Sorry. It's my sister and my fiance. I could not have said that I love them a year and a half ago, much less in front of 450 people, but I do. And that is the gift of this program. So for anyone that's new here, do not cheat yourself by leaving early. Do not think the cash and prizes you're expecting on day one will be there, because you'll be shortchanging yourself again. I thought I was just going to stop drinking, and I got so much more. So I thank you all for my sobriety.